Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Mother's Day! Feliz Día de la Madre! After all that drama, it seems we're getting a very familiar top four in La Liga. AC Milan get an important victory after Inter get one of their own. Man City vent their frustrations against Newcastle after Liverpool are held against Tottenham. Leeds are in trouble, but Toffees maybe not anymore. Arsenal looking good for that top four as well. Heath Pierce is in the house. This and much more as the Qué Golazo weekend recap begins right now. Hey, everybody, welcome to Qué Golazo. Happy Mother's Day. Make sure that you thank, salute, celebrate the mother in your life. And for those mothers who are not with us any longer, I tip my cat and I send one up to the sky. Happy Mother's Day. And Heath Pierce in the house. HP, we're like a 1993 Gap commercial. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. I like the way that we coordinated these outfits today. You know, it makes a lot of sense. And I wore my, for all the tennis moms out there, I wore my tennis mom hat, especially for all of you. I always wanted to be a tennis mom, but, you know, am not. But happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And as you mentioned, the ones that can't be with us. Yeah, I'm excited about talking about some of these matches, some interesting ones. And I have a few topics that actually aren't even on the run of show that I want to throw in here throughout the mix. So I'm excited. Let's go.
I want to get into it as well. Before we get into everything, I did want to bring this up. My wife dared me not to do it. I'm going to do it right now. Before we jumped on, Heath, I took a shower. Right? I wanted to feel like, you know, clean and reset, ready to go. My wife grabbed a cup of cold water and just threw it on me as I was showering out of nowhere. And I'm like, does this happen a lot to husbands, do you think? Are they the butt of the joke, everybody? Heath Pierce, too, you are the only man in your household. Do you sometimes have to suffer and be the butt of everybody's? Because my wife does it to me all the time. I'm basically bullied every single day. And I got to take it because it's in the vows.
Yes. The answer is yes.
See?
And I know, and I'm smart enough to know that I'm not going to elaborate more than that just to say, yes, I, you know, this is the case. And we're using a day like today to raise awareness of the bullying that we get inside of our homes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess the point being is we deserve it because the women in our lives control, lead the way justifiably, and we love you all. But yes, no more cold water when I'm showering is what I'm saying, basically. I really don't need that. But welcome, everybody, to Qué Golazo weekend recap. As we mentioned, plenty to discuss. We're going to get into the Premier League race, of course. We're going to get into the top four, of course. We're going to get into the relegation fight. There was Coupe de France as well. There was some Bundesliga chatter as well. There's a lot to discuss, and I'm glad it's with you, Heath Pierce. Let's begin in the Madrid derby, by the way. And you said it in the weekend preview, you would be really disappointed if the top four ends up being the same old top four. I got to concur and agree with you, my friend, but it seems that that's exactly what's going to happen, by the way, as Atletico Madrid get a 1-0 victory over a rotated Real Madrid, and justifiably so. It was a pretty dreary game. No guard of honor, by the way, in this one, which was intriguing. But Atleti win 1-0. Real Madrid hadn't lost a derby away at Atletico since October 2015, by the way. And that was during Ancelotti's first spell in charge. So there you have it. Atleti go fourth. And with Betis losing to Barcelona as well, well, it's what we all kind of doomed here. Real Madrid top, Barcelona second. Well, Sevilla third, Atleti fourth. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, it was a rather underwhelming. I mean, for me, what's more interesting is the Guard of Honor, just because there's this idea that Real Madrid set this up in a way that they would have to get the Guard of Honor in that match against Atletico Madrid, which is rather funny to think that they could play with points or tinker with points in a way that would allow them to then celebrate or have to receive the Guard of Honor against Atletico, who have denied that. Obviously, Real Madrid have denied, I think, Barcelona in the past. Barcelona have denied Real Madrid in the past for the Club World Cup. And there's all these things of Guard of Honor. And for anybody that doesn't know, generally it's the match after winning some sort of significant title that they're supposed to basically create this line where they shake the hands or clap on the players as they go through that as a sign of respect. But obviously, between all of these teams, there's respect in the trophies won, and that's what they get is the trophies. But they don't want to have it rubbed in their faces. But yeah,
just to interrupt you there, Heath, yeah. as you carry on, just if everybody is watching on YouTube, everybody, and we want your comments. This is a live show, questions and everything. But Atleti in this sign says between the media and the refs and the officials, los de amarillo, like the ones in yellow, the refs, between the press and the refs, they've had a 120-year-long walk of honor. I mean, that's a great banner.
It really is. It really is. I mean, there's something funny to it. And obviously, if you go back in time, all the way back to, I think it was Sergio Ramos who spoke on it before, which was like, the answer is no, we're not going to do it when they had the opportunity to do it. Obviously, Barcelona gave Batiste a Guard of Honor yesterday for the Copa del Rey. And it's just an interesting thing. But between the you know, sort of the three traditional teams and the fact that we just opened with the idea that they're all going to probably finish in the top four again in an order that we expect, kind of disappointing. Having said that, though, as I was thinking about it over the weekend, I was like, I love Villarreal. I like the fact that they came out with a draw over the weekend. But part of me is like, do I want Villarreal to be in a top four finish? Do I want them to be in a Champions League semifinal again where we have to go through a first leg that we did only to think like, oh my gosh, the miraculous is going to happen in the second leg.
And then
they don't. Because it was a tale of two very different teams in the Champions League where I'm like, oh, maybe I would rather make sure that I have a Barcelona in the group stages and Atletico Madrid in the group stages year in and year out.
Real Betis, though, Heath. I mean, that's a real disappointment. I feel losing Copa del Rey champions, which, by the way, as we mentioned in the weekend preview, that guarantees them Europa, not Champions League. They really need a top four spot. Pellegrini has done great things with his squad. It's a kind of annoying that they're not really right now pushing for one.
Yeah, and you know, with them falling off and the fact that Atletico Madrid now beat Real Madrid in the derby, they're now 1 point behind Sevilla, and we could see this 1-2-3 place finish, which, you know, is what it is. But I would have rather have had some sort of drama going into a Madrid derby this time of year, but unfortunately we didn't, other than sort of the political mind games or the political warfare of the Guard of Honor.
Yeah, I'm all for it. If you're going to put up that banner, that's very funny. Like, if you don't want to do it, like, okay, fine. You have a pretty good reason. By the way, obviously, there's three games left in the season for Real Betis, specifically thinking here about three games left. You know, it's not yet out of the question, but you would think that, you know, they really needed to just keep winning because Atleti obviously are still above them. But Real Betis have Valencia, Granada, and away at Real Madrid in the last game of the season, which is obviously the week before the Champions League final. So you would think that maybe Real Betis could do something there. But just looking at the games from Atleti, Heath, if you wanted to add something as I look, but it doesn't seem like they're going to get it.
The only thing that I'm wanting to add is Villarreal, who obviously fell short in the Champions League, now find themselves needing, you know, with Real Betis. I'm not sure what the implications are of them with the Copa del Rey and what that means for another spot in terms of Europa League for Villarreal, if that opens up one more spot for them, because they're currently obviously sitting outside with three games to go. They're 3 points out of a Europa League spot. Maybe it's 5 points.
They are 3 points away from a Conference League.
Yeah,
from a Europa League, yeah.
So there is some sort of implications there for them and Sociedad to where they finish out, to see if they can get into a Europa League spot or a Conference League qualification spot. So certainly some implications in the final games for those three teams, Real Betis, Sociedad, and Villarreal there.
Well, they can just hope for UEFA to come up with another competition, right? And then you can just keep going down and down and down. And, you know, the I don't know, the average silver trophy, and you make it just keep going down.
Hey, Jose Mourinho cried last week, so it's obviously there's some sort of value in.
I'm not making any fun, because Jimmy Conrad does bring always up a good point, which is like nobody cares about that tournament that you're in or you're not in, and unless you make it to the final, and then obviously it means a lot. So no, I mean, Conference League has been a success, and to your point, that's you know, it does mean a lot to people. All right, well, let's move to Serie A, because you know, Inter Milan, after winning, you know, it added the pressure obviously on AC Milan, and they took care of business as they beat Verona 3-1. Sandro Tonali, by the way, I've never seen him and Adam Driver in the same room. I'm just saying.
They look so alike. Kind of crazy.
I'm just saying. I've never seen them in the same room. Anyway, it was his birthday today, and he scored a brace, I believe. But Rafael Leao, Heath Pierce, he is ridiculous. I'm beginning to be like, he could be a superstar. Like, he's heading in that direction.
Yeah, I was actually just I was thinking about it during the match while I was watching it, of saying like, what is his upside? Like, how good could he potentially be? He's obviously been phenomenal as of late. He was a super hyped player in terms of when he got to AC Milan, you know, periods throughout last year. Now we're starting to see him string together more and more of these performances that you're just like, this is ridiculous. Obviously setting up both of Tonali's goals in the match, and Tonali had a couple great finishes, and Florenzi as well to put that game away. It was a little bit dicey there for a little bit when it was 1-1, but now...
Well, Milan conceded first, right? Is that what happened? Yeah, they conceded first. Hellas Verona scored first, and then they equalized at half, so it was 1-0 at halftime, and then AC Milan got it going in the second half. But yeah, to your point, it wasn't all smooth.
Yeah, early on, Milan had a goal called back from VAR, and then Hellas Verona scored one, and then from there... Milan really got into a rhythm, and they were attacking, but you go into the start of the second half as well, and Verona still had some chances, and some, it felt a little bit open, a little bit slow from AC Milan, but now they're in control of their own destiny. They continue to be, and to get out of that with 3-1 between these two teams, because there is a bitterness between these two teams. It's not an easy result whatsoever for a team also with Verona, who really don't have a ton to play for, but in a miraculous way, if they won out for the rest of the season, just like anybody, could have finished somewhere near a European spot.
Can we just let me just come back to Rafael Leao for a second, okay? I believe it's like 17 goal contributions for Leao in Serie A this season. He has the dribbling skills, shades of Ronaldinho. This isn't hyperbole. Like, he really is that good. Somebody commented when I said that on Twitter about the similar pace to Mbappe. I'm not even arguing that. He really is that fast. He's so good. You were saying something. You were wondering about how high can he go? And I'm wondering myself how high he could go. So this is a question to everybody out there. And I believe we've lost our friend Heath Pierce, because there he's back again.
Wow, that was crazy.
Yeah, I know. That was weird. He was so enamored with my monologue about Rafael Leao. He had to think about it for a second and then come back. But talk to me about Rafael Leao, buddy. How high can he go? Like, Milan fans, I know you don't want to hear this. If you win Scudetto, obviously... Champions League action, I'm sure he's happy where he's at, but surely some big teams are also going for him. He's so good.
He is so good. And this is one of the other thing I was thinking about during this match was, I remember all the drama around Donnarumma staying or leaving from the club, and how his fee was going to be cut in half if they didn't qualify for Champions League and all these things. Now he's gone. And now AC Milan are on the precipice of this sort of long lost title that they've been chasing for a long time. And it's, by and large, because of Leao. Leao's been at the club for a while. He's played a number of games. And similarly, we've seen that so many of these young stars that you see the potential in it, and you're like, can they put together a string of results? And then an injury happens. I mean, I use Christian Pulisic as our American example of this guy that put a ton of weight on, all of this potential, and then you kind of hope that it comes to fruition. Now we're starting to see that with Pulisic, of like what kind of player he's probably going to end up being. But Leao continues to kind of go above and beyond the expectations. And like you said, you're starting to pull all these comparisons from top players. And that's a pretty good sign when he's starting to show some of these world-class capabilities of a number of different players that you know, kind of you go, well, he's got a little bit of that Mbappe in him. He's got a little Ronaldinho in him. He's got a little bit of this. And like, he's going to cost a lot of money for sure if he were to go somewhere, but it's good to see him kind of coming into his form. I actually thought it was going to be Brahim Diaz. That was the guy that rounded in the form. And if AC Milan were going to win the title, was going to be because him pulling the strings and him creating a lot of that attack. He's been solid at times, but Leao's been the one that I think if they do win this title in the end, he's going to be one of the major reasons why that's happened.
Yeah, the good news for AC Milan is you keep going up this trajectory as we're seeing right now in the on the screen, Serie A table, and you win Scudetto, Champions League. So there's no reason for a player like Leao to want to leave. The bad news is that there are leagues that have more money, right? We're talking Premier League, etc. So he could be swayed. I'm not trying to add a headline here. I'm just very impressed by Rafael Leao. And also, he'll be going to the World Cup as well. So, like, there's a lot going on for this 22-year-old, by the way. Unbelievable stuff.
And he's barely capped with Portugal, right? He hasn't played a ton of games. He hasn't featured a bunch for him. He was only capped for the first time, I believe, sometime in 2021. Mm. And now, you know, all of that was all based on potential. A guy that we had seen who had come up through, I think, where was he at? Lille before that? Yeah. Before AC Milan, like a guy that has a ton of potential. And now it's starting to come to fruition and we're going to be able to see him. My hope is that we don't see the same as I'm blanking on his name that had an incredible Euros and then is now at Lille as well for Portugal that kind of fell off the face of the planet. He was at Bayern Munich on a big transfer.
Renato Sanches.
Who actually
might be on his way to AC Milan this summer as well.
And he's found his feet, but after he made his big transfer, kind of disappeared for a while after being one of the players of the tournaments, you know, I hope that Leao has now found a new level. And also when you look at just the age of Portugal and needing of kind of like the shifting of, you know, your Ronaldo era of players, this could be a big one for him.
Yeah, so there you go, Rafael Leao. We dedicated that segment just for you. So we will see. All right, well, listen, Inter beat Empoli 4-2, by the way, but the relegation battle, kind of crazy because Venezia, right, they just went all out against Bologna. 4-3, a slim survival hope for them with a last-gasp win, by the way. It was like in the last moments of that game, but Salernitana with their Harry Houdini once again, 1-0 against Cagliari. And that was drama at the death, by the way. But Salernitana preserved their six-game unbeaten run. Okay, but they were about to win it, but Giorgio Altari made it 1-0 in the ninth minute of stoppage time, by the way, which is crazy. So, Des Norris, I don't know if you can show that relegation battle table again, but here's a little bit of look at that. That's just crazy. Just, you know, I mean, Salernitana were like, done and they're doing so good. But yes, I know there's Norris. It's good to have this graphic right here. But yes, I would like to see the league table relegation battle. Heath Pierce, how do you see this one going? Salernitana just keeps going.
Look, I don't want to default always back to the like Calciopoli and everything that took place in Serie A with match fixing and some of the tragic history or infamous history of Serie A. But it is really fun to speculate on what is going on at the bottom of this table. Venezia, even in their game, so they go up 1-0,
yeah,
and then they miss a penalty,
yeah,
and then they follow that penalty up to put it away. Okay, so penalty save, followed up, put it away.
Right.
They go up 2, and then they give up 3 to go down 2-3, and then they score a third on a penalty, and then they score a fourth in stoppage time, and you're like, where was that most of the rest of the year? When I go back to some sort of early kind of late fall, they had a little bit of a glimmer of hope. And then you go on the flip side of Salernitana, who've had to play two relegation battles in the last couple of days. And you have Radunovic and Ribery both sent off in the 73rd, 74th minute. And that's after a penalty where Salernitana go up 1-0. And then the 90 plus 9 playing 10 against 10, Cagliari scores the goal to go 1-1. And now you're going into these final weeks of the final couple of games of the season. I think it's two matches left. And it's 30 points, Salernitana, Cagliari, 29 points, Genoa, 28 points, and then Venezia, who are now done they're as good as done. If anybody gets 1 point, that's above them right now. So they would have to win out and hope that everything goes wrong elsewhere. But it's just a wild, wild finish to this season. And Salernitana, I mean, we saw this as well. I know we're going to get to the Premier League, but you're seeing this as well, where you see this great hope of Burnley. Oh, multiple games. Leeds. Oh, multiple games. They're safe. And then you realize very quickly, Salernitana, run of games, still not safe.
Yeah,
and had they gotten the 3 points, had they snuck out of that with all 3 points, they would be safe. But now they're still in the thick of it with two games to go.
Can I just say, Spezia are not out of it. Like, I mean, obviously they look okay because they just would need, what, a draw, I feel, because they're 4 points above Cagliari, who are 18th, Spezia are 16th. But to your point, it's just so crazy. So the relegation battle in Serie A is insane. So amazing stuff. All right, final thoughts either on that, La Liga or Serie A, before we take a break, Heath Pierce.
Really just Atalanta putting together a solid performance. You talked about Spezia. Atalanta were really strong again this weekend against Spezia, who could have, again, been deemed completely safe. And they left it late as well to get the result. They were 1-1 with Atalanta and then ended up giving it up late into the second half. But overall, it was the same sort of thing when I was watching the Atalanta result of just like, where has that been a lot of the year? And is this now a sign for a transition? And then they put together a performance like this and you go, maybe not. Maybe they still have the team. Maybe they need to keep Gasperini. Maybe the team needs to stick together. But that was my only other final note from Serie A.
No, good point. Atalanta and Villarreal almost mirroring each other's journey so far. But this is the Scudetto race and what's remaining, by the way, as Milan and Inter fight for the Scudetto. And you can see that AC Milan have the aforementioned Atalanta at home and then sexy Sassuolo for the other one. And then Inter Milan, of course. Well, by the way, and Inter Milan also have a Coppa Italia to deal with, right? Is that right? Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a lot for them, but they have Cagliari and then they finish off as well with Sampdoria at home to Sampdoria. So it's a lot. And that's Juve on Wednesday for their Coppa Italia. So I don't know if that will add anything. All right. Well, Heath, you and I said AC Milan would win this whole thing.
We did.
You staying with that?
I'm staying with that now. Like it would... They were a team that I thought if it's going to go wrong, it's going to go really wrong. We saw that January, February of last season, but they've sort of stuck it out. And quite frankly, it's been a year where there hasn't been any terrible performances in the top four, but there hasn't also been anybody that's just grabbed it and said, okay, this is over, which has made it really fun and interesting for us. But I think AC Milan have also benefited from the times that they have slipped. Everyone else has slipped as well. So I'm going to stick with them.
Yeah, me too. What do you think, everybody? Who do you think? Who's winning this thing? AC Milan staying with it? Inter Milan taking advantage? Tell us. And please like and subscribe. Hit that smash that subscribe button, I should say. But let us know. We're going to take a break. When we come back, yes, oh yes, the Premier League. A lot happened this weekend. Qué golazo weekend recap. Heath Pierce, LME. We'll be right back.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back, everybody. Qué golazo weekend recap. Heath Pierce, LME. Straight away, Heath Pierce, before we get into it. Okay, is the title race over?
For what league?
The Premier League, baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's over. I think this is just on a couple of factors that are pretty well known if you've been anywhere on the internet today, which is just purely on the fact that Liverpool drew with Spurs, which I predicted. I predicted a higher
you
score, did. But I predicted
so,
a draw.
And I went with you.
We were laughed at a bit, you know, and it is a little bit of a foolish it's a little bit of a fool's fool of a prediction.
We'll take it. Any naysayers, you thought Liverpool were going to go run away with it or whatever. We'll take the draw, Heath Pierce. Damn right. All right, keep going, my friend.
But here's where it gets a little interesting is that for Liverpool, for most of the season, have had a better goal difference than Man City. Man City's five-nil win against Newcastle has now moved them to +4. Over Liverpool. So now +68 goal difference versus Liverpool's +64. And that's where I see as the difference. They've still got three matches left to play, but if it's going to come down to it, I don't see them, you know, slipping up twice. Maybe they slip up once in the final three games, if at all. And that would then come down to needing these massive swings of goals. And I just can't see that. And like, I just feel like with one circumstance of just pure points, sure, it was open. But now with points, the fact that they drew and the fact Liverpool drew and the fact that goal difference changed so significantly, I just can't see it coming back from that because even in the final three games, if they were to slip up one, they're still going to score a bunch of goals. It's hard to not think that they're going to keep that kind of stat padded for the rest of the season. How about you?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm a little weary because Liverpool's next game is away at Villa Park, and I feel like we're going to take part of some kind of narrative here. But a few pieces of context. As we break down Man City against Newcastle, by the way, very, very impressive for Manchester City, even the Goliath that is Manchester City, to come away with a 5-0 win against a very confident Newcastle side, by the way, who had been doing so well as of late. They lost just 1-0 against Liverpool the game before that. But before, they had a fantastic run of games, 1-2-3, a four-game winning streak as well. And you got to give Man City a lot of credit here. It wasn't just 2-0, 1-0 scrappy win. It was 5-0 against Newcastle. Kevin De Bruyne was fantastic. Goals came from Rodrigo, who, by the way, scored on his third straight Premier League match, I believe, as well. You know, so it was a very, very good game. Pep Guardiola on beIN Sports, by the way. Good question, leader from Carrie Brown, by the way. He said, everybody in this country supports Liverpool, the media and everybody. Our destiny's in our hands. This is important. What do you make of that?
I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, there's just something pure in terms of the way people feel about Liverpool. Now, I've always liked City just because of the fact that because they are new, I get to watch them guilt-free. I probably watch City more than I watch Arsenal in terms of like minute per minute because it's entertaining. And it's fun.
Just aesthetic.
Aesthetics. And it's a modern style. In the same way that I used to watch Real Madrid or Barcelona without any strings attached, just going like, I'm watching this because I just want to see good football. Whereas Liverpool have a little bit more of this. It feels like they're backed by the region. They've got a pretty stronghold globally versus Man City, which is a different type of seemingly fan base that's coming about with this next generation. And then domestically, it certainly seems like Liverpool are the more football pure. And you could break that whole thing down and apart to ownership groups, to money spent and all these things. And you're probably going to balance out somewhere along the way on a few of those items. But I would agree that Liverpool are the team that are much more beloved than a Man City. People want to see Man City fall primarily because of, again, the against modern football, the way that they've spent, the fact that they're at the top since the moment they got to the top, they've stayed near the top for a decade now. So I don't disagree. Do you think that they're sort of picked out or bullied, or do you think that's a little bit of dramatization, so to speak, and that it's maybe not so much Liverpool that are kind of rooted for by everyone?
No, I think I kind of agree. I do agree from a neutral perspective, you know, the way that from a financial Middle Eastern, we've got more money than you take over situation. Nobody really likes to see Man City. They like the narrative of Pep Guardiola never winning a Champions League without Lionel Messi. They want to keep it that way, etc. And to your point, Liverpool perhaps has this, like, you know, quote unquote pure journey, you know, which is kind of laughable because they're owned by Fenway Group, which is you know, they're not poor Oliver Twists themselves, right? Yeah. So it's not about that. I just think that this was right out of the Jose Mourinho handbook of creating a narrative, I think, which was very good. I think it was very smart for Pep Guardiola to do this. It's kind of like what Kris Jenner does with the Kardashians sometimes. It's like, you know, we need to get a cover on People magazine. Let's add a little narrative here. I think that's what Pep Guardiola did, because I believe Carrie Brown's question was more like, you know, how do you feel now, right, after losing to Real Madrid? You know, it wasn't like she didn't directly ask this. She didn't directly say, do you feel, right, that everybody's against you, that everybody hates you? He kind of went that way. But I'm with you. I'm not disagreeing with Pep Guardiola. I think it's true. I think a lot of the neutral fan base wants to just keep seeing this Pep Guardiola Goliath of a machine that spends £100 million on a British player, $300 million bench, etc. They want to see them like that fail just because they like the idea of the purity that is the game. But let's be honest, like Liverpool have a lot of money. It may not be Man City money, but yes, I think that what Guardiola did basically was kind of genius.
Yeah, it was smart. And to be honest, full credit to Man City for bouncing back the way that we did.
I think it was JJ.
JJ had maybe thought that there was a moment to slip, right? With Man City, if I remember our preview correctly.
Yeah, I think he saw a draw in that one, actually.
Yeah.
Which it's not a bad assessment, because to our point, Newcastle gave Liverpool a very difficult time, and they were on a 4-game winning streak before that, and they feel very confident. They want to prove what they can do next season. But Man City, full credit to them. They were very, very good, and they won 5-0. And to your very first point, Heath Pierce, not only are they 3 points above Liverpool, but they have a 4+ goal differential as well. Yeah. Obviously, they don't want to win on goal differential, but it does matter, you know, putting these away.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that there was some intention when you went into the 80th plus minute and you could smell, you know, a little blood in the water. They just kept going and going and going, knowing the importance of that. And now they give themselves a 4-goal cushion in terms of goal difference. Definitely gives them more margin for error. And to have that type of mentality after being knocked out of the Champions League when you had everything in your hands, and the one trophy that everybody is sort of putting the pressure on you to go and win, to be able to shift back to the league and put together a performance like this against a Newcastle side, like you said, a lot of people, I would guess, probably the majority of people thought that Newcastle could sort of poke and prod at this vulnerable City side and really disrupt their season and watch it all come crumbling down, because that's the story we want to see, is like a full meltdown from Pep Guardiola. But to put in that performance is really impressive. All around, just a hard thing. You come back from the emotional roller coaster getting knocked out of the Champions League. I think about any time that I was knocked out of anything, and nowhere near what it was like, what it'd be like to play at a Man City or at a club that size with the pressures of the Champions League, and sort of in the way that they quote unquote choked to not go through. That would be really hard to come back from, even if you were in a position of privilege within the league in terms of the table.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, everybody? Do you think the title is done? And what do you think about Pep Guardiola's comments? Do you think they're justified? What do you think Pep Guardiola is trying to do with that kind of answer? Very quickly, Liverpool-Tottenham, we've already discussed it. Jurgen Klopp, by the way, he wasn't impressed with Antonio Conte's tactics. He said, with all the praise probably for Tottenham, they sit back. They won against City, so the game plan works for these big games, but they're still fifth. They obviously work for everything, time wasting, these kind of things. Smart, but it makes it not easier for us on the other side. What do you think, Heath, on those comments?
This goes back to the Pep Guardiola comment about Liverpool. If you read the comment, it's just got so much subtlety of like talking crap, but in a very kind way of like they play horribly. Yeah. But it works, you know, and he kept kind of going back to like, but it works. And so like, you can't discredit them for doing something that works, because it worked against, you know, worked before, and it worked now against Liverpool, who are chasing, you know, a Man City for a title. And so you could see there's just these moments in there that are like these kind of things, smart, but it makes it not easier for us on the other side, which is just kind of like, yeah, it's a good game plan. It doesn't belong in the game of football, but yeah, it works for them. So be it. And so like, there's something to that where, you know, Pep would be like, why did they even show up? You know, why did they even come on the field today? They don't want points. They don't want anything. That would be just the difference of sort of tonally. Jurgen Klopp just has this way of swimming through these types of things that it's really interesting. But again, it's a game plan that worked, and Liverpool have had to sort of face that from a number of teams throughout the year. But now you've got a team that actually has the skill sets to do it really well. and also be able to punish you on the other end. That's not something you want to be able to face. And, you know, kind of goes back to the Mourinho Chelsea days. It goes back to Spurs when they're at their best, things like that, where it's like, it can be really frustrating for a team that's used to playing wide open. Yeah. Liverpool only beat Newcastle 1-0, but they were still wide open against them the whole time. And Newcastle tried to play a little bit, which plays into Liverpool's sort of not gegenpress, but just the chaotic like havoc they want to create in the attacking third to win the ball back and go to goal.
Yeah, in regards to those comments, Rafa Cardenas, a viewer, thank you so much for commenting, said, you know, I love Klopp, but it stinks of a bad loser. Whenever I read these comments like this, it doesn't have to be Jurgen Klopp. I'm not just pointing fingers at Jurgen Klopp. But whenever I read these comments like this, I ask everybody, think about the timing of this. What if Liverpool had won 1-0 and he was asked the same question? Obviously, he's frustrated. It's totally because he lost. He's so annoyed. That he drew. It's so annoyed that he didn't get 3 points. That's the whole point. Of course, he's going to get frustrated at what he sees in front of him. So he decides to point the fingers at the strategy of Antonio Conte, which, I'm sorry, but you're going up against Liverpool, who are a better team than Tottenham. What's Antonio Conte going to do? He's also, by the way, very good using the counter. And he has a very good striker in Harry Kane and a very good attacker in Heung-Min Son. What's he gonna do? Like, he has to focus on that. So had Liverpool won this, I bet you that comment would be completely different. Of course he's frustrated. It happened right after the game. He probably wouldn't even say that midweek, but he has to say it right after the game. It's 1-0. He couldn't get the win. And that's the most important fact of all of this. He couldn't get 3 points.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was a game that was more dominated by Liverpool, but it was against a Spurs side that was welcoming that type of pressure and attack and being able to withstand wave after wave of the attack. And it could have gone the other way, even though it was more dominant in terms of the stat sheets was much more dominant to Liverpool. Both these teams could have ended up with 0 points at certain points in this match. And so it's got to be frustrating for him because it would have kept that pressure on what was seemingly, you know, even with a 5-0 win, a team that has a little bit of vulnerability to see out the season with Manchester City. But now they've got a whole bunch of variables that are less variable now.
Yeah, and great. The frustrated Liverpool, all they need now is what? Aston Villa. Great. Thanks so much there, Tottenham.
You didn't believe in the Villa Burnley. You said they were going to give up 3 out of the 2 they've got to play, and they put a beating on them. So that's a pretty impressive one.
That's right. I was more optimistic than Jonathan Johnson, to be fair, as well. So, and you know, it's fun. All right, let's keep going here, by the way, because I do wanted to talk Heath Pierce. A good win against Leeds United, Arsenal. You would think that after that horrific tackle from Luke Ayling and the red card, you would think that they were going to keep going, but Leeds, to their credit, got one back, actually. But Arsenal win 2-1 as a result of this, and they are fourth with 4 points above Tottenham. Even if they lose the North London derby, they still, Mikel Arteta on their side, control their own destiny, Heath Pierce. A good weekend for Arsenal.
Fantastic weekend for Arsenal. And again, they're now within striking distance of Chelsea. So now you're talking about, which actually plays well for Spurs, going into the North London derby, that if either of these teams take points, there's still an opportunity to make it a sort of a three-horse race for 2 spots in the top 4, which I think plays well into the ones below, considering Chelsea could only pull off a draw in front of their new prospective owners, which we'll get to. But yeah, a fantastic win for Arsenal. They still gave up a decent amount of chances. Leeds looked like they had a few little moments in there where Arsenal got a little shaky that they had to close out. But these are the performances that Arsenal would have given up points on, even though they were playing up a man. There was just those moments where they shut off for a second and they get punished, whereas now they're finding ways to put out those fires last second, even when they shut off for a moment, or at least they're not being punished for any of those types of things. So a good 3 points heading into the North London derby, and it's going to be an interesting wrap to the season with Chelsea, who I thought were going to secure that number 3 spot with a win and weren't able to get that in the end.
Well, we're going to talk about that right now. Who's the loser of the weekend? And I ask that to everybody, by the way. You've got Chelsea, by the way, as Todd Bowley was welcomed, but it was more of a Todd Woley performance. See what I did there? Right? Even though Chelsea women, congratulations, crowned league champions for the 3rd straight year, though. Sam Kerr, please watch that goal. That was amazing. But Chelsea, Cody scores in the last moments of that game to make it 2-0 for Chelsea against Wolves. All right? So now obviously, when you look at the table, they're 67, only 1 point above Arsenal, by the way. So Arsenal couldn't even come third. So who's the biggest loser? Chelsea, Man United, by the way. We're going to record the lowest points in the table. They lost 4-0 to Brighton as well. Ralph Ranić saying there's already at least something like a number of players that are really top players for this club. But as I said, we need all the other areas. Suppose there will be 6 or 8 new players. They should be top players to strengthen the quality of the squad. What I've been saying forever, Heath Pierce, everybody talking to me about Ronaldo, better with Ronaldo, better without him. It's not about him. The laundry list for this club is huge. So who's the biggest loser? Chelsea, Manchester United, they lost 4-0, or Watford, who got relegated. Roy Hodgson does the lap of honor. He gets a lap of honor. Real Madrid don't get a lap of honor. Roy Hodgson does a lap of honor with Palace fans, by the way. Doesn't acknowledge traveling Watford fans. Oh, man, it's just a lot. So who's the biggest loser of the weekend?
Oh, man. Honestly, it's got to be. I would say it's got to be Manchester United.
You know, it has to be. Lowest points ever in the Premier League.
Yeah, and lowest points ever for them in the Premier League. And just the lowest of low, to the point where, again, if you're talking about Ralph Rangnick saying that there's some really good pieces in place, if there's good pieces in place, I don't know where they are in terms of, or what's missing, because that means you must have some major, major pieces missing if you're going to get beaten that bad and have no real chance at winning these matches at this point in the season. You're going to have your lowest finish. And yeah, the morale just seems absolutely battered. And so I just can't think otherwise. I mean, Chelsea seems like one where, okay, final moments, new perspective, ownership group, that sort of thing. But still, when I look at just pure results in the team, it's got to be Man United. What's your take?
Yeah, Man United, lowest points. West Ham got a good win. They got a game in hand, by the way, over Man United. So they might not get Europa League. Cristiano Ronaldo, if he stays with United, probably won't see Champions League. I think that's the first time, I think maybe in a very long time since he was part of it as well. Yes, Natalie, very good point. You got to give credit to Brighton. Very good team. Yeah, we know how good Graham Potter is and his squad. They're building something very special there. They're 9th in the table, top half of the table with 47 points, not far away from Wolves as well, who are 8th. Obviously, they have a game extra. Brighton, very, very good. They have a good system. They have a good setup. But Manchester United, we're talking about Manchester United. And Des Norris said in the comments, it should have been more. It should have been more. It should have been more than 4-0. And that is scary. They're definitely the losers of the week. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's really, really poor form. Also, I would have gone with, I would probably put Leicester City up there in terms of poor performance of the weekend, but they're kind of just in bad form, period. And
I don't know what to make of them, honestly.
They're certainly making the relegation fight interesting at the end with Everton, who have a game in hand against the other ones fighting relegation. Burnley obviously dropped points over the weekend. Everton get their win against against Leicester City. And then Leeds, obviously, as we talked about with the 2-1 loss and the red card against Arsenal. It's going to be...
Yeah, so let's talk about the relegation fight, yeah. Heath. Watford are down. All right, we already... Norwich are down. Who's going down? Leeds, Everton, or Burnley?
I feel like I'm so deep in the... I mean, up until like 3 weeks ago, I still said it was going to be Burnley, Watford, Norwich, because that's the way it had been for a long time. Obviously, we're seeing a little bit of this Salernitana from Burnley right now, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of points and then dropping points. And
would this help your answer, Heath Pierce, if I give you the schedules for all three? Ready?
Yes, please. Let's do it.
Leeds have Chelsea at home, Brighton at home, Brentford away. Just think about that. Chelsea at home, Brighton at home, Brentford away. Everton have Watford away, Brentford at home, Palace at home, and they got an extra game, but that's away at Arsenal. Okay. Then Burnley have Tottenham away, Villa away, Newcastle at home. Who's going there?
I mean, I'm saying Burnley. I mean, Leeds have a horrible schedule as well, but even Everton doesn't have it easy whatsoever. But when I think about Newcastle at home, what were Burnley's again? Newcastle at home,
Tottenham away, Tottenham Villa away, Villa Newcastle away. At home.
Yeah. I mean, I just think you come down to the final game of the season, I think you're dropping 6 to get there, and all 6 points to get there. And then you're going to need one against the Newcastle side at home. That's going to want to finish on a high note. Maybe, maybe they're going for a top half finish. Maybe they're rotating the squad on the final day. But I think that's a rough one.
This goes down to the last game of the season for everybody. I'll tell you that right now.
It has to, right? Because you've got Leeds play Chelsea.
Leeds play Chelsea at home, and Chelsea are not, I mean, what? They're going to lose after drawing to Wolves too? I don't know. Yeah. Then Everton have Watford away. So I see Everton winning that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I mean, at the same time, you start to see weird stuff.
Maybe not.
Where Watford, all bets are off, the pressure's off. I played some of the best football of my career when the pressure is off and you're just you're just playing with house money at this point. And again, very rarely does it convert into something that instantaneous, but it could. It very well could that Watford, have something a little bit special going into this game because they know they're down and they could just play a little more free, or players are playing a little bit outside of the structured system that they wanted to, which obviously didn't work. So it could come down to that. I don't want to give it more credit than it is, just because I'm overthinking it.
It seems it's coming to the last day of the season.
It has to. I just look at those schedules and I go, dude, all three, like Everton probably have the best chance to stay up, just because of the fact that they've got enough games. They're in decent position now.
Two home games, one against Brentford, Palace. Yeah,
Pickford's the best player in the club right now, and if your best player is a goalkeeper at this point in the season, that's keeping you in games. I think that's a pretty good thing to have on your side.
So I think because of that, Everton are fine, and I think it's between Leeds and Burnley for the last day of the season.
I agree.
My God. All right. Okay. Well, good luck to all.
And I think they're both going to lose both until the last game of the season. I think they're literally going to be going into the last game and the same, with probably the same amount of points that we see now.
Well, right now, Leeds and Burnley have the same amount of points. Yeah. It's just Leeds have a horrific goal differential.
I know. Was it 35 or something like that?
35.
Yeah.
That's just insane. Oh, man. It's tough.
What's Burnley's? Is it like
17?
17, yeah. Yeah.
So, God. Yes. So I think, you know, we're all talking about the title race, goal differential, the relegation battle. The goal differential might be the one right there.
I know, man.
Crazy.
I don't even know. I literally don't even know what more to say to that, other than the fact that
be fun. Ready? I'm going to don't even think about it. I'm going to say who's going down, Leeds or Burnley. You're going to tell me just like that. Okay. Ready? 3-2-1. Who's going down?
Burnley.
There you go.
Come on, that's Jesse Marsh. Yeah. That's so biased.
All right.
If we have another American manager fail, I'm probably just going to stop working in this sport, because I'm just like, we're never going to make it.
But this one's not going to be fully his fault. What 35 goal minus differential. That's not Jesse Marsh. That's Marcelo Bielsa for the entire part of their season, right?
Who also got his guard of honor when he was there as a legend of the club, you know, just from the club itself, for leaving the club better than he found it, but worse than it was at a certain point.
I can't remember when Jesse Marsh took over, but the Leeds lost 6-0 to Liverpool. They lost 4-0 to Tottenham. They lost 4-2 to United. You know, they've had some really, they lost 7-0 to Man City in December. You know, that's difficult to climb back from. Like, that's
it really is. Yeah.
It's not easy. All right. Bundesliga. Stuttgart's draw with Bayern Munich means Augsburg, by the way, are officially not going down. Heath Pierce, how about that?
Woohoo. I mean, I don't know what I actually, I don't know if I actually think about that, because Augsburg just got battered by Leipzig today. Neither Ricardo Pepi started or Tyler Adams started. Ricardo Pepi got on the field. Tyler Adams got around on the field.
They both have to go.
Both played. I do think so. I think this is the end of a period for
let's go with Tyler Adams.
What a great little tweet, by the way. Yeah, I wonder how long that was up when it only had 3 retweets and 2 quote tweets. Where I'm like, that's kind of disappointing. Like, but people don't understand in the U.S. landscape just how much that means for the fans, what that means for everybody to just have relief and safety. You know, people. The American mentality would look at Augsburg and go, what a bunch of losers. But when you're there and you realize how you play in an 18-team league and you're fighting for something all the time, you're either fighting to survive, you're fighting for a European spot, you're fighting for a title. Very rarely in the Bundesliga is anybody but 2 teams fighting for that. But when you're fighting relegation, that survival means so much to the club, so much to the fans, that it's viewed as and it's celebrated as a win. There will likely be a party.
Look at Everton today, Heath Pierce. Yeah. Did you see what Everton did? Like, King Power Stadium was empty and their entire fan base, Everton, will still celebrate. It was a guy in crutches just celebrating, putting these crutches up. It's crazy.
They'll celebrate it like it's a trophy because of the implications and what it means and how people have seen their club sort of decimated by relegating and sometimes never coming back. You look at the second Bundesliga; those are all in the last 10 years first Bundesliga teams that have gone up, elevator down. It is really hard. They don't have the same sort of parachute as you do in the Premier League, going to the Championship, and so you go down, you might not come back for a while.
Very quickly then, Tyler Adams, Pepe, should they go? Leave their clubs?
Tyler Adams, I think, can prove himself more because he's a known commodity there. I think he should leave, but Ricardo Pepe definitely needs to leave. I've been against this move from the very beginning. You're never going to, like, what's going to happen next year? They're going to be a mid-table
back to
club,
MLS or find somewhere else?
I don't know. I would love to see him play in a, you know, even if it was going to like
a championship, maybe.
No, I don't want to see him in the championship. I mean, I would love to see him.
You don't want a Josh Sargent journey. You don't want him at Norwich, right?
A PSV, I don't think it'll be at an Ajax, but like a PSV Eindhoven, I think even a Feyenoord or an Osset Akmar, by the way, in that league is wrapping up to be pretty wild as well. You know, something like that. I could see him again at like an Anderlecht or a Belgian club, maybe a solid French club somewhere that's playing a little bit more open football, that's going to get him chances in and around the goal, get his confidence up, because I don't want to see him lose another year at Augsburg. And I mean, it's going to be hard for him to move. It'd have to be a loan because no one's going to pay 20 for him now or the upside of whatever 20 it would have to become. Mm. I'm guessing his value is less now, and I don't see them selling him for that. So it's tough, but I think it would be, I don't know if that's the right club for him because of just the type of club that it is, the chances they're going to have, the budget they have to build a team around that are going to allow him to thrive as a young player. So he's got to figure something out.
Well, and it's a, you know, World Cup in November as well. You got to make things happen as well. By the way, Leipzig thump Augsburg, as we mentioned, 4-0 to capitalize on Freiburg defeat to Union Berlin. So that race for fourth is still up there. Coupe de France, very quickly, I'll just give you the updates. Nantes wins 1-0 against Nice. Ludovic Blas penalty clinches Europa League qualifications, by the way. It's Nantes' first major title since 2001 when they won Ligue 1, by the way. And Porto wrapped up their league title, number 30. I don't know if you saw the videos of Porto's dressing room, but they were feeling it.
And I saw him with a cigar, doing a little dance, manager having a good time.
Love it.
It's great.
I love it. This is what it's all about, man. All right, well, that's it for Gigo Lasso weekend recap. Final thoughts, Heath Pierce, before we say goodbye, buddy.
Yeah, I watched the Ajax game. Interestingly, obviously, you had Ajax playing away to Osset Akmar, were able to draw in the final moments. I can't remember when the last goal was by Alvarez. Actually scored an 86th minute goal. Great header to draw them level at 2-2. The PSV game, who are obviously a couple points behind Ajax, kicked off later on. They also ended in a draw with Feyenoord. So it's going down to final two games of the year, I believe. Let me just confirm that. 34. So they've got two games left in the season. They're now, because of the draw on the draw, it would have gone up to 77. They would have been a win on the final day, and a loss for Ajax would have put PSV as champions. But now they've got a little bit of a buffer that Ajax just got to win one of the last two, which is really interesting. Again, one of these things where you expect one team to slip up and PSV to take advantage of that with a later kickoff, knowing the result that they need, and weren't able to get that against, just unfortunately have to play against Feyenoord of all people in that game. And so it looks like Ajax are going to wrap up that title. They just need 3 points in the next two matches.
Well, that will be a nice way for Ten Hag to end his tenure with Ajax, of course, before he goes to the nightmare that's going to be Manchester.
Well, you guys, Ajax is having to fight to the end. So maybe that's going to be,
I know, but at least he's one stuff.
Sort of thing like, he's like bringing to the table, which is like, we fight to the end.
Yeah. And the Dutch are nicer. They'll be like, okay, Ten Hag, you didn't win, but it's okay. We wish you good luck. Whereas like, you know, United fans are going to be mad. All right. Well, my only final thoughts are, by the way, Jimmy Conrad, by the way, he's got 4 tickets and a parking pass to Angel City to take on Orlando Pride. Mm. So that's 10:30, I believe 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific, right? So he's trying to give him away, people. So get in touch with Jimmy Conrad. He's got 4 tickets. Come on now. Angel City. Have you been to a game yet, Ethan?
I have not been to an Angel City game. They just had their opener a week ago, and really impressive crowd, sellout crowd at Bank of California. I was actually there yesterday for at the same stadium for the Philadelphia Union draw with LAFC. But it's supposed to be a pretty incredible atmosphere, and I look forward to going to a game. I'm going to have to ask Jimmy for those tickets soon so I can take all the kids.
Yeah, you got to hit him up because he's doing it right now. And by the way,
I know he bought season tickets, he said, and he's going to be giving them away all season long. So make sure you're following Jimmy on that if you're in the LA area or if you're traveling here at some point, because there's supposed to be an unbelievable atmosphere.
Yeah, and by the way, North Carolina Courage won the Challenge Cup 2-1 against Washington Spirit as well. All of this stuff, Attacking Third, our women's soccer podcast has you covered as well. Don't you forget it. My only other final thought, by the way, was that the championship playoffs are set. And God, I got to remember exactly, but it's Nottingham Forest against Sheffield United, Luton against Huddersfield. I believe that's what it is. But it's kind of crazy because Luton, by the way, Luton Town, all right? We always talk, Heath, about like budgets and what teams have in order to build up and try and climb up. Fulham, obviously, with that Khan money, obviously, you know, their cost of squad is about £160 million around, mm-hmm. you know, around that plus. Bournemouth is about £125 million. Okay. So they're the two teams going up automatically. Sheffield United around £101 million. Okay. Pounds. Okay. Okay. They just came back, you know, they just relegated. Mm-hmm. Nottingham Forest, more modest, okay, £36 million. Okay, so that's pretty good. Luton Town, Heath Pierce, £1.5 million, their entire squad.
Jeez Louise. Okay, isn't that the American Boy song that they sing with Kanye West? Touchdown in Luton Town.
That's it.
Yeah. I thought they were saying London, but I guess it's Luton Town.
No, I think it's London Town because it's American Boy with Estelle. But they should totally steal that and make it Luton Town. £1.5 million for their entire squad. Squad.
That is incredible.
That's Jack Grealish's breakfast when he goes away, like an hour ago. That's unbelievable. So, you know, and Luton Town, technically London, okay? There's a Stansted Airport right there. You can like, so the best of luck. Championship players are going to be fantastic. Jimmy Connor has some tickets for you if you're in LA as well. Heath Pierce, always a pleasure, buddy. Thank you so much, man.
No, thanks for having me. What an exciting game of games of football over the weekend. And man, I get excited when Dez hits me with the like, hey, you around for this weekend? Because literally I would not miss these ones for anything just because there's so many implications at play across all the leagues that I always appreciate having these conversations. So thank you.
Well, dude, I'm really happy that you're happy because, you know, get that phone nearby because we're going to call you up a lot just in case because Heath is very busy these days. He just finished, obviously, Sueño with Alianza de Fútbol. He's got in Soccer We Trust as well. There's a lot to discuss in Soccer We Trust. So don't forget what's coming up this week. Heath, anything special or just rambling on about the USMNT?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have the ability to ramble on. You know, when Dez decided he was going to give us 3 days a week on the show, we go on pretty hard, but we've got some more bad news. We got a special guest later on in the week, but we got some bad news in the national team. Miles Robinson.
Oh, God, that's right. Oh, that's a killer. Do we know the latest with that, by the way?
I believe it's an Achilles injury. Oh. And so it's pretty significant to the national team and what that means. And
I'm not a USMNT fan. I never want to see a player get injured, especially a young player that's dreaming of going to the World Cup. Miles Robinson seems to be one of the nicest, hardest working people. I feel for him, man. I feel for him.
Yeah, it's tough news. And then we're going to be talking about sort of Americans in the Bundesliga review, kind of similar to what we talked about now in terms of where do players need to move. You know, Bundesliga for a long time has been our spot for young American players. And now we're sort of seeing this shift where we have everyone from George Bello, who's not getting a ton of time, to now Tyler Adams not getting a ton of time, to, you know, the fact that what's his name went to Mallorca. He's not getting any time anymore from Schalke. Schalke have now gone back up. There's a lot of things to talk about for Americans in the Bundesliga and what that means heading into, again, this is a World Cup year, heading into the summer transfer window and all that. So another busy week of In Soccer We Trust. I appreciate you giving us the little plug there. Make sure you guys tune in.
Yeah, and this USMNT sign might look very different when November comes around. You never, never know. But Heath Pierce, at Heath Pierce, make sure to follow him on Twitter as well as Instagram. In Soccer We Trust, make sure to follow them as well. And Que Golazo, always here. Don't forget, we have no Champions League, but hey, that doesn't matter. We got a lot of content to come your way. Some special interviews, the continuation of our World Cup episodes, by the way. Our latest one was Fabrizio Romano picking his three teams that he's going to be rooting for at the World Cup. And one of them, yes, I bribe them. It's Peru. Make sure you watch and you check it out. But we got plenty of come. Heath Pierce, LME, LME Chigaray as well. Que Golazo, CBS Sports, your CBS Sports app. Have a great Sunday evening. Happy Mother's Day. Feliz Día de la Madre. See you next time around. Have a great beginning of next week. Till then, have a good one.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast, and I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.